You might have noticed, newspapers, TV stations, and other news outlets are dropping like flies in Canada these days. Whoops, there goes another one. But that's okay, because it leaves more room for independent media, like Rabble.ca. You can join the independent media revolution too. Go to www.rabble.ca/donate.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Link. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents. This Saturday, the 10th of September, I'm Giselle Hanna.
And I'm Pierre Morrow. And it's the 3rd of September is already gone by. And
we're you were wanting to say something about spring, weren't you? I could feel it.
Yeah. Well, it is spring. it's wet and everything's growing and all that. But yes, so it's all good, Giselle. And thanks for Solidarity Breakfast for another good program, and I wish I could tell you what that song was, but I really can't. But I'll blame her on Giselle. She's the younger and hippiest person in this show, so I'm the old one, old and wise one.
Listeners, we know that you love the ageism that is ringing loud and clear on this show. Let me tell you, though, what's coming up on today's program. Many of you will have seen the extraordinary general strike in India. We've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now. Of course, that was held on Friday the 2nd of September. 180 million workers came out for that general strike. And in the second part of the program today, we'll be speaking with Vasudevan, who is from the New Trade Union Initiative in India, about exactly what happened and what was the impact of that strike.
Are you sure it was only 170 million?
180.
180, good.
I did say 180.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to work, there you got the numbers right.
I got exactly the numbers right. Because I'll tell you why. Because I said to him 150 million, because that was something that was reported. And he's like, no, that was last year's general strike. It was bigger this year. I was like, all right. Well, I mean, huge numbers. You can't even grasp that number here in Australia.
No.
But of course, it is time for news from around the region. We're going to start in Turkey, where things are...
And if people don't want to know more information about all
this,
they
can't. If people want to know, they're just going to have to deal with it. If you do want to, well, let's first say Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. And if you do want to find out more about us, you can find us on the web, all the www.aawl.org.au. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well, so find us on those social media platforms.
So you need the steady hand of experience on this program, Giselle.
Which you do not have, it seems. You couldn't even back announce the song. Shall we go to Turkey? We need to tell people about the repression of workers in Turkey that continues. The attempted military coup in Turkey of mid-July allowed the government to crack down on any real and apparent opposition. Tens of thousands of workers were affected by a wave of suspensions and dismissals in the days after the coup attempt. Unfortunately, this campaign of repression against workers has continued. On the 1st of September, 10,000 public sector workers were sacked. Turkey is now the leading country in the world for imprisoning journalists, and over 11,000 teachers and allied personnel this week were suspended until further notice. That is literally throwing 25,000 people into unemployment overnight.
Yes, it's amazing how those figures can just bandy around. Oh, we've just suspended 10,000, 20,000, whatever. And you just think, apart from the big numbers and like the individual impact on those people, you just think, like, how do you get rid of 10,000 in one day? The impact on the students and the officers and whatever. So very interesting.
But all of the individuals that are dependent on those workers for their livelihoods. I mean, the situation in Turkey is still unfolding. We're going to see a lot more repression, desperation over there.
Yep. No, that's right. Unfortunately, that's true. And I know that there was a sad story there. I've got a little good news stories, as listeners really do want to hear good news stories. So I've actually got two good news stories, sort of, the little ones. Anyway, we go to South Korea, where this week the Korea Workers' Compensation and Welfare Service handed down a historic decision when it accepted that two workers had died from a pulmonary condition due to occupational exposure. The Compensation and Welfare Service agreed that payments should be provided to the families of Lee Kyung-hui and Song Yoo-kyung, as they had died due to exposure of chemicals in their employment as semiconductor workers. This finding comes on the back of the recent ruling by South Korea's Supreme Court that had rejected a claim by three workers for compensation on a legal technicality. So a small win for the families.
Well, we've got, so we've been talking to you a little bit about the PepsiCo workers in Pakistan that have been fighting to win recognition of their union. Of course, we brought you the victory of that. So that was just over 2 months ago. About 650 workers at the PepsiCo-owned company of Frito-Lay in Lahore, Pakistan, were able to win recognition of their union as their representative for collective bargaining negotiations. Obviously, we reported that as a fantastic victory, and it very much still is, because PepsiCo has fought very hard against workers in other plants, and those include Taiwan, New Zealand, Australia, South India, North India. However, the workers in Pakistan now face a new hurdle because that company, PepsiCo, has formed its own fake union in an attempt to undermine the genuine workers' union. It just goes to show that while capitalism remains in place, we will always be under pressure from the capitalists.
Took the words right out of my mouth there, Giselle, yes. We go to Thailand at this time, where this August, for the annual tradition of pardoning some prisoners on the birthday of the King of Thailand, Pornthip Munkong and Dharani Chanchen Jingsungpakul, or Aka Da Torpedo, were both released from the women's prison. The significance of this release is that both had been imprisoned for the crime of lese majeste, and Da Torpedo actually had another 8 years to go. While these releases are to be welcome, the reality is that Thailand remains a military dictatorship with widespread human rights abuses. A recent report has also confirmed that the Thai military is among the country's biggest landowners. There you go.
And last week we brought you that story of the mass deportations of migrant workers from Thailand back to Burma. So that the repression looks a number of different ways, but obviously all basically comes down to the weakness of our side in that country, I think.
Yes.
This week in the western New South Wales town of Barriulgil, in Australia, an Aboriginal man, Floyd Laurie, became the first confirmed case of the fatal asbestos cancer mesothelioma. Floyd was not a worker at the asbestos mine, but grew up in the adjacent town of Barriulgil, where white asbestos was piled up on the streets. Floyd's cancer is now expected to be only the first of many, as mesothelioma takes many years, 30 to 40 years, to develop. The mine was owned by the notorious James Hardy Company, who owned other asbestos mines and factories. James Hardy has now moved away from Australia and is denying any liability for the sickness and death that its products are still producing.
And I actually watched, there was a recent TV program, and that's actually not the only town, predominant Aboriginal town in that region that's affected by this. But in this particular town, James Hardy actually is on record saying that they don't have to look after the health and safety of the Aboriginal workers that were working in the asbestos mine because they were going to die beforehand anyway.
So they were the mortality rate for Aboriginal people is so much lower, so who cares? Is that was the argument.
That's correct. It's just beggar's belief, although it's true. So, anyway, we now go to Indonesia, where it's possibly a very, very bad news story. It hasn't quite happened yet. But basically, this week, in an ominous announcement, the chief of the National Narcotics Agency of Indonesia, General Budi Waseso, stated that they've got plans to procure more weapons, and intelligence was only the start. General Waseso commented that he not only supported the current murderous war on drugs campaign in the Philippines, but that he believed that such a campaign would safeguard our beloved country of Indonesia. Now, considering that Indonesia, this approach would just reactivate the death squads that killed thousands of people in the 1980s and would be a direct link to the massacres of 1965-67, where at least 500,000 people were murdered. So, again...
Following in the steps of Philippines President Duterte, it sounds like...
It's like a nightmare, you know, a bad... Anyway.
How long have we been saying we are now at the pointy end of capitalism and there's only one way out from here?
Yes, yes, but there's many ways down.
Okay, I take your point. I just want to announce a movie fundraiser for AAWL. This is being held on Monday night. Listeners, I have to be honest with you. I am a little bit anxious about this one. I don't think anybody is coming, so I need you all to come to this film fundraiser. We're screening The Battle of Algiers, which is actually quite a wonderful, wonderful film if you've never seen it before. It's one of the most influential films in the history of political cinema. It focuses on the events of 1957, a key year in the Algerian struggle for independence from France. And one of our comrades, Lionel Bopagi, who I'm sure many of you know, he'll be introducing the film with a discussion about the political dimensions of national liberation struggles. Lionel Bopagi, of course, was a leading figure in Sri Lanka. So that film is being screened on Monday the 12th of September. That's in a couple of days' time. 6 o'clock for a 6:30 start. It's at Long Play, 318 St George's Road in North Fitzroy. Tickets are $20 wage, $10 concession, and all funds do go towards supporting AAWL's campaigns and activities. Of course, if you want to come and see the film, I'm not going to say no if you don't have your $10 or $20. It really is about publicising AAWL's work, getting to know and meet our organisers and learning a bit more about the organisation.
And people
too.
Can get your autograph as well while they're there.
Yes, they can. And you know, it's in hot supply, but, you know, get my autograph, pawn it off and make millions.
That's right. It's just on 12 past 9 o'clock. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents here on 3CR Radio. We'll go to a community announcement and then we'll be back with the interview regarding the Indian general strike.
IPAN is inviting you to attend its anti-war conference and join the Close Pine Gap protests from the 26th of September to the 2nd of October in Alice Springs. Pine Gap facilitates US war activities, international espionage, and their killer drone program. It's time to stop the drift to war and free Australia from US military bases. For more information on the IPAN conference, go to ipan.org.au and for protest details, see closepinegap.org. IPAN is a 3CR supporter.
It is 14 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents. Nambiyat Vasudevan is a long-standing international partner of Australia-Asia Worker Links. He's with the New Trade Union Initiative in India and the Blue Star Union. The Blue Star Union represents workers in air conditioning manufacturing, so that kind of industry. I spoke with Vasudevan, so they're based in Mumbai, of course, where some of the biggest strikes were held in New Delhi. But I did speak to Vasudevan about the 2nd of September general strike that was held in India.
According to the Employers Association, 2nd September strike cost them something like $3 billion. The loss suffered by the government and the industry because the strike is according to the association chamber of commerce, it is $3 billion. I am speaking from Mumbai. In Mumbai, the strike was in a different level. All industries in Mumbai are closed. All India. This is an all India strike, in which 180 million people joined. 180 million people. It's not 150. 150 was in 2015. In 2016, that is on 2nd September this year, the report says 180 million people participated in the strike throughout the country. And this involves workers in public sector, in government sector, private sector, and in formal sector throughout the country, from one end of India to another end. Some states in India were completely closed for all practical purposes. But the strike was not uniform everywhere. In Mumbai is supposed to be the center of industrial activity some years ago. After globalization, all industries have been closed down. There is no manufacturing, there is no production, there is no industry functioning in Mumbai. They are all gone out of Mumbai. So in Mumbai, the strike was not very effective. But in other areas where the new industries have come up, the automobile industry, IT, etc., they joined the strike. The strike was very powerful in banking sector, insurance, coal, and mining, where workers joined in big number. So that is the total effect of the strike of 180 million workers throughout the country.
That sounds so extraordinary. And the number of striking workers is many times the number of people in Australia. So for Australian trade unionists, we cannot even imagine what it takes to organise that number of workers. Can you tell us a little bit about the organising efforts? How is it even possible to get that number of people out?
As you know, general strikes have been taking place in India. Such national strikes have been taking place in India since 1991, after the opening up of economy and the globalization process started. So this has gone on almost every year. This is a 16th national strike against the government policies, in which all the national trade union centers are involved. And mainly now, one of the main unions, which was aligned to the ruling party earlier, that is the Congress Party, they have also joined workers' agitation opposing government policies. All unions were together, irrespective of the political party affiliation, including the trade union affiliated to the BJP, which is in power now. But BJP backed out this time just before the strike. But many of the BJP members also joined the strike. So therefore, on all India basis, 11 central trade unions and hundreds of other unions in various sectors can mobilize workers in different areas. And in a country like India, it has got 1.25 billion population. 1.25 billion population, and 180 million is a small number. In fact, there are 400 million people who are employed in this country, 440 million people employed in this country working. So it is a huge number, there is no doubt about it. So 180 million is only a small fraction of the population of the country. And all unions together definitely can bring more workers, and strike can become very effective. What's happening is, unfortunately, that is not taking place. And a one-day strike is not enough. The strike should be of a longer duration. Then only government will accede to the demand. The demands are very important. The demands are important for the people. Minimum wages, working hours, pension, social security. These are extremely important demands for every worker in all sectors. Therefore, the strike becomes so massive, and participation becomes very, very huge. That's the reason for that.
But so I appreciate that not all unions were working together in order to get as effective a strike as what you've been describing. But at the same time, isn't it the case that more unions came together to organise this one than previously during the general strikes and the growing movement that you described earlier?
Look, for the last few years, for the last 6-7 years, all unions are together. All unions, irrespective of political party affiliation, and India has a very peculiar type of union functioning. Most of the unions are linked to political parties, either the left parties or the right parties. All unions are connected with political parties, and if all unions come together and take a decision, it is possible to make it very, very huge. So unions were together for the last 5-6 years, all unions, irrespective of the political affiliation and the ruling party. On workers' issues and trade union issues, they have somehow remained together. Only now, in this strike, Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh, BMS, which is affiliated to BJP, which is a ruling party at the central government, federal government, that union decided to opt out of the strike on the basis of certain announcement made by the minister, Finance Minister of India, 2 days before the strike, conceding to some of the demands of the unions involved in the strike of 2015, like minimum wages. The minister announced the minimum wages can be increased to 10,000 rupees from something like 4,000 to 6,000 rupees. And BJP's union, BMS, said this is an improvement and the government is ready to consider the demands of workers. Therefore, we should not go ahead with the strike. So all unions are together and therefore it has become possible because these unions are extension of political parties.
You've raised an important theoretical issue, which is if all unions got together, then you could make some decisions that actually resulted in much more powerful industrial action, longer general strikes that actually grind capital to a halt in India, putting pressure on the capitalists to accede to the demands of the workers. In theory, that's very, very good. The issue that faces all of us internationally is how do we take that theory and make it a reality? Yeah. What are the real barriers? And you've already mentioned the fact that some unions are aligned, or all unions are aligned to political parties, whether they're left-wing or right-wing. And you mentioned the ruling party, which many commentators actually describe as fascist. So what interest would a fascist party have in actually grinding capital to a halt? So what are the practical, in your view, what are the practical steps required to result in unions coming together to actually have those practical solutions on the ground?
It's a very, very, very complex situation in India. The union position gone changing according to the party in power. And unfortunately, this has gone on for many years. But now, because of the increasing attack on the rights of workers, and also it is necessary for these parties to get votes of the people. See, it's a big number, 400 million people who are in the organized and unorganized sector. Their vote power is big. So therefore, the unions have to take a stand that we are on your side, irrespective of the political position. Ultimately, every consideration leads to election and coming to power. Therefore, no party can keep away from the demands of the people. The poverty and lack of jobs, unemployment, employer offensive in closing down companies, it may not be very genuine. You have to stand with the people, otherwise the unions will be wiped out. So in order to keep the union going and to keep the union survival, it becomes necessary for all the unions to say that we are on the side of the workers. When workers' issue come, they cannot keep out of it. If they do that, then they will not have any room for survival.
So, Vasudevan, what do you see as the next step in this big struggle? You've just had a very, very successful 180 million worker general strike. If everybody goes home and forgets about what happened, obviously we will go backwards. How do you maintain momentum, and how do you use that momentum to go to the next step?
This will definitely increase because the government is planning to change the existing labor laws with whatever benefits existing for the workers now. Government is in a serious move to change the labor laws. I think this strike will definitely give more inspiration for the workers and the unions, and they cannot keep away from the future action. How and when it will take a shape, etc., is very difficult to predict because the hugeness of the country and the big and the massive problems of the people, and also very complex nature of the political condition prevailing in the country. So my feeling is this will act as one more spirited feeling for the people and the workers to forge ahead and continue to fight, because it's not going to be easy, because the government in power has a huge majority and they can pass any legislation. Workers' representatives are not in parliament. There are very few. So therefore, there is going to be a very, very, very serious problem for the industry, and also the government policies regarding FDI, disinvestment, and complete push for privatization. This can create more problems for workers and the unions, and unions will have to gear up and fight against these policies, including the changes in the labor laws. No more
violence! No more violence! No more silence! Hey, this is Nick from Pinyao. You're listening to 3CR. Please support community radio and your local music scene. Subscribe now. Give money back to the people that give music to you.
28 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents. That was Nambiat Vasudevan speaking about the 180 million worker strike on the 2nd of September. Just in the closing minutes of the show, I want to just remind you about AAWL's fundraiser on Monday night, the 12th of September. We're screening The Battle of Algiers with a special introduction by Lionel Bopagee. It's 6 o'clock for a 6:30 start at Long Play, which is 318 St George's Road. Please come along. I will look forward to meeting you. Let us know that you're listeners of the show so we can acknowledge you especially.
And that's all that we've got for today. And stay tuned to 3CR for the next program, which is Palestine Remembered. But that's all from me, Pierre Morrow.
And me, Giselle Hannah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.